You know, it's really cool when somebody is considered to be a legend and they just happen to be an absolute down-to-earth guy. That's how I would describe Ray Dittinger. Ray, welcome. It is great to have you back with us on the show today.
Always good to be with you, Steve. Thank you.
All right. So let's get to finished business. This is really cool. In all the years that you're in this business, I'll start with this. There's an assignment in my sports broadcasting class here at Penn State where they have to go out and cover an event. And I said, look, don't come back and just say, and in the third, he got a base hit that's not going to run. And in the fifth, they scored this way. I said, you got to go the game within the game and find a story. And that's the assignment. You got to find a story within the game. When did you learn that lesson at a young age in this business?
Oh, I learned it before I got in the business, Steve. I learned it as a kid growing up at my grandfather's bar. It was, you know, people have often asked me, you know, who were your great writing influences? You know, how did you learn how to write? Who taught you how to craft a story? And, you know, certainly the Sandy Gradys and the Larry Merchants and the Stan Hockmans had a big influence on me. But I think the biggest influence was my grandfather. You know, he owned a bar in Southwest Philadelphia, and we lived in a little apartment a block away. And from the time I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I pretty much lived in my grandfather's bar. I sat at the end of the bar drinking Cokes, watching TV, and listened to my grandfather tell stories. And he could tell a story better than anybody. In the book, I describe him as he was the Garrison Keillor of Southwest Philadelphia. sitting at the end of the bar just listening to him talk about the Phillies game of the previous night or talking about Joe Walcott and Ezra Charles, I mean, all of that stuff. I mean, I just sat there, and he had the ability to set a scene, describe the action, and just draw you in. That was, even as a kid, it was just magical. And, I mean, he packed the bar every day, and people just came. They came for the beer, and they came for the cold cuts, but they mostly came to hear my grandfather tell stories, and that was kind of where I learned.
What did it mean in the World Series when you and your dad made eye contact after the Phillies won?
Oh, that was, what a moment that was. It was the 80 World Series, and, you know, it's game six, and it's the ninth inning, and they make the announcement in the press box. Okay, all members of the working press, you know, head downstairs to the interview room. And you know, I had done that run a million times, because nobody ever wants to wait till the end of the game. I mean, you don't want to get caught in the crowd. You don't want to be caught in the craziness. God forbid you should get caught in the press elevator, which we've all done at various times. But, you know, this night, I mean, everybody got up, they packed up their stuff, and they headed for the elevator, and they went downstairs. And I was the last guy left in the press box. And I said, you know what? I'm not going. I've waited my whole life to see the Phillies win a World Series. And they're about to do it right now. And I don't want to be in some windowless room at the basement of the Vet watching it on TV. I just won't. I just don't. I want to be here in the press box with the windows open, and I want to see it, and I want to hear it, and I want to feel it, and I want to smell it. I want to just wrap myself in it, you know. And so I just stayed. I mean, the only guys left in the press box were Harry Callis, Rich Ashburn, me, and the PR guy Larry Schenck. And part of it was I knew my grandfather, where his seats were. He was right below. He was literally right below me. He was right below the press box, so he, you know, he was right within sight. And when Doug McGraw throws that last pitch past Willie Wilson, and Willie Wilson swings and misses, I looked down at him, and he looked up at me, and our eyes met, and he gave me this big smile and a big thumbs up, and. You know, we had that connection at that moment. And for me, that was the World Series parade right there. I mean, that was it. And so I was determined I wasn't going to be downstairs. I didn't want to miss out on that moment. That's how I remember the 80 World Series.
I had the same kind of connection with my grandfather when it came to sports, too.
You know, sure.
He may not have been, you know, at the bar, but I had the same connection with my grandfather. And it's interesting, I have the same connection today with my children. So now I fast forward to the Super Bowl. What did it mean when David was there and you could share that moment?
You know, that was great, Steve. And I honestly think that if that hadn't happened, if the Eagles hadn't won that game, and David and I hadn't had that moment after the game, which was televised live to God knows how many thousands of people. If all that stuff hadn't happened, I will tell you honestly, the book never would have been written. What really prompted me to write the book, what really prompted me to sit down and just kind of just put all this stuff together in form of a book was that. It was the Eagles finally winning the Super Bowl, and having that very special moment with my son, and the way people responded to it, the way people reacted to it, the way it was so much bigger than I ever imagined it could be. I just finally decided, you know, I had a book publisher had wanted me to write kind of my memoirs before, and I tried it. I had tried it like four years earlier, and I just, you know, I wrote a couple chapters, and I went got back to them, and I said, you know what, no, I can't do it. It just, I'm just not feeling it, and I'm not going to write this if I don't really feel right about it. And he said, okay, fine, just forget about it, just put it away, and I did. But then after the Eagles won that Super Bowl, and the, you know, David and I had that moment on camera, and people responded the way they responded. All of a sudden, I said, "You know what? Yeah, I think I'm ready to do that book now." And you know, if that hadn't happened, I don't think the book would have ever been written. But the fact that it did, and the fact that it seemed to touch so many people, I just decided, you know what? I think this is a story worth telling, and I'm kind of glad I did.
Once you actually started telling it, how quickly did you get into a flow of writing this?
Yeah, really fast. I mean, and for me, like really fast. And anybody that knows me knows what a painstakingly slow writer I was. I mean, I was literally known around the world is probably stretching it, but certainly around the country, I was known as the slowest sports writer in creation. It just took me forever to write a story. I mean, I was locked in every press box, every stadium, every venue, every arena, in North America for sure, because they just assumed there couldn't possibly be anybody still working. And they would just lock the doors and turn out the lights, and that was it. I mean, that happened to me everywhere. So it was really a struggle to write. It never came easy for me. Did for a lot of other guys. I mean, I saw, you know, the great Bill Lyon could write real fast. Stan Hockman could write really fast. There were some guys that just had that gift. I didn't. I mean, every time I sat down to write, it was a struggle. But this one came pretty easy. This one came once I started writing it, and once I kind of figured out what it was I wanted to say. The actual writing part of it came fairly easily to me.
Obviously, we've talked about the successes, but obviously in Philadelphia, there's been some tough times. What does that do to the creativity of a writer trying to cover seasons like that?
No, it's a test, you know. But I think that one of the what you touch on is it's a good point, Steve. You know, I think that the fact that I lived through all of that, you know, I lived through the 1964 Phillies collapse. I wasn't in the business then. I was still a college student. But I lived through it. I almost flunked out of college because of it. I mean, the Phillies collapse in September of 1964 damn near wrecked my life. Yeah. And I wasn't alone. I mean, all the people in the city, I mean, I saw all those faces on the subway in the morning. I mean, I saw what people were going through. I lived through that. So that whole Philadelphia sensibility was in me, and I had lived all that. So when I was lucky enough to get a job in newspapers in Philadelphia, and I never had to go anywhere else, and I was able to just stay here and write about the teams that I had grown up with and the city that I had grown up in, I really thought it was a great advantage for me. You know, I mean, all the guys I've mentioned before, you know, Larry Merchant, Stan Hockman, Sandy Grady, Wicker, George Casita, all these guys, Tommy Cushman, great columnists, all of them, but they all came from other places. You know, I mean, Tommy Cushman and Bill Lyon were from Illinois. You know, Larry Merchant, Stan Hockman, Bill Conlon, they were from New York. You know, Wicker and Grady were from North Carolina. I mean, great columnists, all of them, but they had to learn Philadelphia. You know, I had it in my bones. You know, yeah. I mean, I grew up with it. And so when that moment that you and I are talking about, that Tug McGraw throws that fastball past Willie Wilson, strike three, all over, Phillies win the World Series, you know, I didn't have to try and project and say, I wonder what this means to Philadelphia.
Right.
You know, I wonder what this means to the people in the stands. I wonder what this means to the millions of people watching on TV that are running into the streets right now. What does this really mean to them? You know, if you didn't grow up in Philadelphia, that, you know, you're wondering that. I didn't have to wonder. You know, I was feeling what all of those people were feeling. And I think the idea that I kind of had that that sort of feeling and that kind of Philly sensibility, I still had the scars of 64. I think that was a real advantage of me when I sat down to write, because I think I was really writing with the eyes of a Philadelphia fan.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm going into my 40th season of doing Penn State games.
Sure.
Look, I've seen, Ray, you know, I've seen some tough days.
Sure.
Okay?
Oh, absolutely.
What it does, at least for mine, and I'll see how you feel about it, is that when something really good happens, it at least lends perspective. It's not a gravy train moment. You've got a perspective because you've seen what the struggle was like.
No question. No question. So much of our life and so much of how we relate to sports is really about the context. You know, it's about the moment, it's about the achievement, but a lot of it has to do with the context. You know, how does this fit into the overall mosaic of this town, of this fan base, of this franchise? You know, none of it exists in a vacuum. You know, Nick Foles comes in and wins a Super Bowl for the Eagles. Mm-hmm. You know, he's carrying on the torch from Norm Van Brocklin. He's carrying on the torch from Donovan McNabb. I mean, Tommy Thompson in the 40s. You know, even if he doesn't know any of those guys or know their names, the fact of the matter is that, you know, he's trying to do what they tried to do. And for the fans, for the generations of fans that have watched all this, you know, they see it that way. You know, that this is their franchise, and they've been rooting for this team, and they've been hoping that this team could deliver for them. And they're hoping that this guy can do what these other guys couldn't do. And that's the context. And, you know, as you put it about all the things that you've seen at Penn State, you know, I've seen it all here in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I said I don't know that I would have written this book if the Eagles hadn't won, I think that's true. But once they did win, I almost had to do it. I kind of like had to do it because I was coming up on it really did mark 50 years of the business, which is a nice round number for sure. but it also meant at that point, as a writer, as a journalist, working journalist in this city, you know, I had now seen the Flyers win two Stanley Cups. Mm-hmm. I had seen the Phillies win two World Series. I had seen Moses Malone and Dr. J win an NBA championship in Philadelphia. The one missing piece was the Eagles. It was the Eagles bringing the Lombardi Trophy home. And once that happened, and especially in the manner in which it happened, I kind of said, you know what, I got to write this. You know, I mean, this kind of brings the whole thing to conclusion. And so that became the book, and that became the title. You know, the title of the book is Finished Business. And I really kind of felt like when the Eagles won that Super Bowl in Minneapolis, that was kind of, for me, finished business. They kind of completed the cycle.
Finally, this one for you, Ray. For whatever reason, as a youngster, an athlete will make an impression on you. What was it about Tommy McDonald that made that impression on you? And then what did he do over the years to enhance his impression to you?
My hero. My absolute hero. I was just a little kid when the Eagles drafted him in 1957. And I was a football savant from the time I was like 6 years old, my grandfather's bar. And I followed pro football and I followed college football. And at that time, there was no better football team than Oklahoma. They 41 games in a row they won. And their star was this little itty-bitty guy named Tommy McDonald. And I was just fascinated. I was fascinated by the college team that never lost. I was fascinated by this little guy that week after week did these amazing things. And then, lo and behold, in 1957, who drafts him but the Philadelphia Eagles? He's going to be coming to my hometown. And as in the book, I spend a lot of time talking about the fact that our family used to go to Eagles training camp, which was then in Hershey, every summer. And we would go up there for 2 weeks, and we would watch every practice. And now I knew that Tommy McDonald was coming to Hershey. And so I started standing outside the locker room waiting for him to come out every day. I swear to God, I was like 8 years old, and he didn't seem like he was much bigger than I was. And he almost looked as young. I mean, he had this short cropped blonde hair, and he had this baby face. And I would wait for him every day outside the locker room, and he would come out, and he would see me, and he started calling me little brother. And he would say, "Here, want to carry my helmet?" And I would take his helmet, and I would walk with him to the practice field. And this became a ritual that went on for his whole time with the Eagles. And we developed this really lovely relationship where he was just so kind to me, and he made me feel so important. And when he called me little brother, it felt real to me. So I had that experience, and then, of course, once the season started, on Sunday I'd go out to see him at Franklin Field, and he was such a great player. I mean, he was just great. I mean, he wasn't just great, but he was thrilling, and he was exciting, and he played with such exuberance and such joy that it was just, yeah, everybody loved him. I mean, he was the most popular guy on the team, and the kids loved him, but everybody loved him. But in my heart, he was mine. In my mind, he was my guy. And in our section, in the stand section, double E, whenever Tommy would make a big catch or score a touchdown, everybody would start pointing at me and saying, "Your boy, your boy, your boy." And so then later on, when he retired and I became a sports writer and I got to know him a little bit on another level, I knew that the one thing in his life that he was kind of missing was the Hall of Fame. And he certainly belonged in there, but it looked like it was never going to happen. So I began sort of a campaign to get him what he deserved, which is a place in Canton, Ohio. And I tried. It took about 12 years, but finally in 1998, he got in. And he asked me to be his presenter. And so, this whole story plays out in the book. But, there I am, August 1st, 1998, riding in an open convertible through the streets of Canton, 250,000 people on the sidewalk. And I'm sitting there in this open convertible, sitting next to my boyhood hero. And we're on our way to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I'm going to present him for induction. And Steve, if that's not the definition of dreams coming true, I don't know what is.
That is such a cool story. The book is entitled Finish Business. And with a lot of summer coming up here, it's going to be a perfect, great read before the next Eagles training camp.
Ray, and a wonderful Father's Day gift, I might add.
And that leads you into summer. And then
exactly
leads you
right.
into training camp. Perfect. So if you could do that, that'd be great because it'd be well worth your time. I can't wait myself. Ray, thank you so much for your valuable time. We really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, Steve. Anytime. Take care now.